Welcome to Our Burning Questions, a professional learning podcast where we answer your most compelling questions about teaching, serving, and supporting multilingual learners. I'm your host, Jasmine Coaxum, and through our talks, I look forward to bringing the methods, philosophies, and stories behind teaching multilingual learners to light. Let's get into the show. Heather Rubin is an administrative coordinator for the New York State Education Department's Long Island Regional Bilingual Education Resource Network. Of course, Long Island's Auburn. She's at Eastern Suffolk BOCES, where she provides technical assistance for K-12 school districts on meeting the needs of multilingual learners. Her academic interests include designing digital age learning ecosystems for in-person, hybrid, and remote learning environments, as well as promoting culturally responsive, sustaining education practices for English learners, including those students who have limited literacy and little exposure to formal education, otherwise known as SLIFE students. Her combined expertise on TESOL and the use of technology to support learning developed while working for BOCES, and we're excited to have her answer some of our burning questions on our show today. So hello, Heather Rubin. I am so happy to have you on our show today. Really excited to speak with you about your recently published works and some of the works that you have published before. And first, I want to kind of talk to the audience about how we met. How did we cross paths, right? Because this is not the first time that I'm speaking with you. So we met each other through Dr. Marshall, Dr. Helene W. Marshall, and she introduced us because we both have the similarity of being really interested in tech and digital ways to engage students. So before we kind of get into your work, I would like you to, of course, tell us a bit about your current role in education.
It's so good to talk to you again. And yes, I'm currently working for the Long Island Auburn. I'm an administrative coordinator there. And I do a lot of different things in that title. I think one of my greatest passions is I am the administrator for their Title III consortium, which is completely based on the integration of technology to support English language learners. So
exciting. Yeah. Okay. So of course, I always want to know what inspires people to do what they do, right? So what really inspired you to become an educator of ELLs in the first place? What led you to this field?
Well, you know, I think we actually had a conversation about this once, you and I, but as a college student, I majored in international service in French, and I always wanted to be part of a global community. And I just love, you know, helping ELLs navigate this major transition in their lives. You know, it's for me, it's a service, you know, helping them adjust to a new culture, obviously the language. I'm a linguist. I love teaching language, and, you know, but especially making sure I'm providing them with the academic resources that they need to succeed. I'm really all about making sure that they're getting the same rigor, the same resources, the same school experiences as their peers.
Ah, I see. So you mentioned French. So are you a French speaker?
Well, I was. Unfortunately, chance to use it very much. So I would say at the time I was a gifted student of French. I really excelled and unfortunately don't really have occasion to speak French very often nowadays, but I'm sure it would come back when I do.
Okay. You know, I always like to understand the language interests and backgrounds of educators of ELLs, because I feel like you can definitely feel more for your students and kind of understand where they're coming from a lot more if you've been in that position where you've really integrated yourself in terms of like a language, a different language and culture. All right, so let's kind of get into it about this recently published article that you wrote along with Andrea Honingsfeld and Lisa Estrada in this month's issue of Language Magazine. So the name of this article is Designing Learning Ecologies, in which you said, I'm going to quote you now, our focus has shifted from how to use technology to support multilingual learners to how to use technology to create digital age learning ecosystems. Now, when I read that, I thought, wow, that's really an interesting term. So can you share with our listeners, what is a digital age learning ecosystem?
Well, you know, a learning ecology is something that has been referenced. I think it was coined in the year 2000, but it refers to, you know, the physical, social, cultural context in which the learning takes place. And it specifically, you know, references how technology fits into that place. It was coined by someone in the tech field, the ed tech field. But I think of it like any ecosystem, right? It's a community of organisms, right? We are all in this environment together, functioning as a unit. And how does this system work together? I mean, even businesses, you know, there is an ecosystem where they're interdependent parts. So you can look at a learning ecology from the classroom level, from the school building level, or even beyond that to the entire district. And in looking at it this way, we can create systems that have tech infused into this entire system so that it's working seamlessly, it's working effectively. I think at this point, we're at a level where we need to start refining those systems so that we all function together well.
Okay, so I'm really curious about how you came up with the idea to name this ecosystem as such. I mean, to name this particular method of really helping ELLs in their learning journeys as a digital age learning ecosystem.
Yeah, again, it's really not my name. I think that digital age is where we are, right? We're in the digital age. I think we used to talk about the digital age. And I think that it's really important for educators to start using this term because our traditional practices are just not enough. You know, for ELLs and language teachers, you know, these traditional methods, and we could go down the whole list of all the different ways we do what we do, are just not enough if we don't infuse them with 21st century skills. And if you read Lisseau, her topic briefs on advanced literacies, which is a NICED document that is available for free on the NICED website, you know, she talks about using multi-literacies and multiple modalities for learning. And this is really one of the reasons why it is so effective with ELLs, because of these multi-literacies being addressed and the multiple modalities being addressed. So that's why it's important to reference the digital age in all that we do, because we're not in the same era of education anymore.
Excellent. Yeah, that's a great point. We definitely are not. And people always have said that education seems to be kind of the final frontier in terms of integrating changes that society is kind of going through, right? It usually seems to take longer to take hold within the traditional educational system.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah. So I'm glad that you mentioned the 21st century skills, right? So in your article, you talk about the 5 C's for 21st century ELLs, right? And you talk about critical thinking, communication, collaboration, creativity, and culture. So can you dive a bit into each of these, or the ones that you really want to highlight here for our listeners and why you think they've only become important in the 21st century?
So, you know, it's so interesting because the four C's, the Partnership for 21st Century Learning, way back, had identified the four C's: communication, collaboration, creativity, and critical thinking. But as L educators, my co-authors and I knew that we had to add that fifth C, culture, because it is so inherent in everything that we do. And it informs our practice. And everyone, you know, in the 21st century is aware of how small the world is and how important it is to bring culture awareness into everything we do. So if you look at the skills themselves, these are not new to education, but the methods and the ways in which we express ourselves are new, you know. So that's, and I agree with you when you say, like, you know, it's the education systems are the hardest to adopt, you know, new ways. And I think one of the silver linings, if there could be such a thing, of the pandemic is that it actually forced us to face the realities of the digital age in instruction by requiring us to adopt some of the technologies and the virtual learning practices and the tools that we needed during that time has accelerated the process. So it's a good time for 21st century learning right now.
Right. So, I mean, I'm glad that you you talked a little bit about skills in that answer. And you mentioned that part of how these digital age learning ecosystems can support language learners is to help them incorporate all six literacy skills, right?
Yeah.
And now these skills were listed as listening, speaking, reading, writing, viewing, and visually representing. So this came to my mind because you mentioned that the methods, you know, the ways that we are kind of engaging students now in terms of these C's, okay, has changed. Like, I mean, the C's are not different, but the methods are different, right? So I feel like including these last two is one of those differences, because before I read this, I thought there were only the first four. I mean, the first four are usually what are mentioned in terms of skills when we talk about language learning, right? Mm-hmm. Usually it's listening, speaking, reading, and writing. That's it. So what do you mean by viewing and visually representing? And have these last two come about as a byproduct of a stronger emphasis on tech?
Yes, absolutely. These, again, the concept of the six skills, the six literacy skills, dates back to 1996. So this is, again, not new, which is always surprising to people. But the National Council of Teachers of English identified these six literacy skills back then, right? So now, why are we becoming more aware of it? Yes, technology. Our students are learning and responding, communicating, collaborating through viewing and visually representing activities, right? They are, we know when YouTube came out, right? It became a big deal because people were learning simply by viewing these YouTube videos. And then they're creating, if you look at all of the different ways that we create visual representations, just think of Instagram, right? And all of these memes and all of these different things that we do visually to represent our learning or to communicate, it's essential that this is a literacy, that we teach this as a literacy skill. This is a means of communication that has never been explicitly taught in the classroom. And it goes hand in hand with the receptive and active, like when you think about expressive skills like speaking and writing, right? And visually representing. Those are those active, expressive skills. And then you have the listening, right? The viewing and the reading, which are the receptive skills. So these all work together in a different way today, because multiliteracies involve all of this happening simultaneously. If we look at some of the videos, or we look at infographics, right, we're interpreting so many different things. We can have an interactive image that has sound bites embedded, that has images, that has text, that has graphic representations, you know, charts, and all of this is happening at the same time. So we have to develop students' ability to, you know, use multiliteracy skills.
Now, the thing is, once again, you said that these were, that these last two were, or these six skills were spoken about back in 96, you said, yes. Mm-hmm. And you know, when I'm looking at it again, viewing and visually representing, of course, this was happening before, okay, whenever students did presentations, right? I mean, that's a visual representation. You know, if they are coming up, writing something on the board, speaking in front of the class, even if they're, whether they were using flip charts or, you know, of course, presenting something using a PowerPoint, et cetera, right? That visual representation definitely was there. However, once again, going back to what you said before, it's about the methods, right? And now students have the ability to create these visual representations on a whole different scale, remotely, you know, and then kind of bring it into the classroom. I mean, we have hybrid, we have just all kinds of ways that we can bring together this viewing and visual representation. So that's great. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the DATEL framework. Okay, so this is something else that you mentioned in the article. So in it, you state that the DATELs, it has an S at the end, the DATELs framework develops a language learning in a low anxiety environment that increases social interaction among all levels of language learners. So first, of course, for our listeners, what is the DATELS framework? And then can you explain to us how it accomplishes this low anxiety and high social interaction?
Okay. So the DATELS framework was actually designed with the first edition of the book that I co-authored with Lisa Estrada and Andrea Honigsfeld. The first edition of Digital Age Teaching for English Learners was called L Frontiers. And in L Frontiers, you know, we created this framework so that, you know, you could have a guideline of all of the different components that are necessary to have a 21st century learning experience for L's, trying to ground our teachers of L's in this concept that it includes the six literacy skills. They have to be addressed. It includes the five C's. All of these come again from the tech world, these concepts of authentic communication and contextually rich language practice. That's something that we've spoken about, but you know, some of our methods in teaching English would be very text-based, book-based, right? And we weren't really embedding authentic communication and contextually rich practice, student-centered practice, in real project-based learning experiences. So that was part of the DATELS framework, to have them understand that all of these things have to happen together in order for us to have a 21st century learning experience, a digital age learning experience for English learners. A lot of it involves social interaction and letting them have agency over their learning. It's inquiry based, right? So you get that critical thinking going. And by authentic, I'm a strong believer that as we are shifting towards project based learning, and I hope it becomes the norm rather than the exception in the classroom. I believe it's the most most appropriate way for our learners to interact not just with the language, but with the content, to learn skills outside of that are really transferable to life, that are just outside of the academic content, but just the social skills. And so that's basically in a nutshell. It's just a visual representation of what the 21st century English language learners classroom should look like.
Wow. I love so much of what you said, and I'd like to kind of branch off in terms of some of the particulars there that you mentioned, right? So I want to start with this word agency, because I love that word, okay? And in your article, I think a couple of times, right, you mentioned that these ecology systems or ecological systems, they allow students to have a voice and a choice, right? I really love framing it this way, for students to be able to have a voice and a choice, right? And then you also talked about transferable skills, right? Now, in the article, there was also, I'd like to quote something else from the article. There were so many nice little nuggets, nice little bites to take from this article. So you said, we must also ensure that students can transfer their newly acquired knowledge to career skills and lifelong learning. And I think this is one of the most important quotes, you know, as in the classroom, when teachers are in the classroom, you know, teaching students how to navigate IRL, as people say now, in real life, sometimes with all the requirements from school administrations, educators can kind of forget about that. Like you said, these skills have existed, yet they weren't really and truly being implemented, right? So I think that it's really important to remember this, right? We are not training students to function in a classroom. We're training them so that they can go out and navigate using these skills in real life. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And you know, what it brings up for me too, is talking about assessment. You know, so what we have, our traditional methods, what we have kind of gotten stuck in a rut in a way, is how are we measuring our students' learning, right? So we're not, how do we know that they're getting these transferable skills when we're giving multiple choice tests or just fill in the blank, or, you know, if that's all we're doing? So how are we allowing our L's to show us what they know? Right. And that's where not just getting up and presenting the PowerPoint, but in so many different ways, when you use something like project-based learning, you're giving all students, you know, what works for L's works for everybody, by the way. It gives all students the opportunities to demonstrate what they know in authentic inquiry-based activities, so that they may have to go out and speak to some community organizers, and they may have to present to people who are not just within the school community. They really have to encounter the world. So, but then the question is, you know, so how do you measure their learning, right? And this is why it's helpful for L's too. This is why this works for everyone, but it's especially helpful for L's, because we're giving them different ways aside from just the standard language testing to show what they know, right? Because they have all these tools that they can then represent content learning regardless of their English language proficiency level. And that's one of the secrets of why the Dattles frameworks and a Dattles approach is so helpful. It is different from what we've been doing.
Wow. So once again, there are a couple of things right now. First of all, I love that you said secrets, right? that's part of this podcast is sometimes as educators, we have these burning questions. How can we do this? How can we do that? And the purpose of this podcast is to bring those methods out into the light so that they are no longer secrets and they can be used to really serve our students. So I'm glad that you brought up the projects again, right? Because your article says that teachers need to design tasks and projects that set groups of students on exciting technology-infused learning journeys. That writing is just awesome. I really love that. Okay, exciting technology-infused learning journeys. So can you perhaps give us like a practical idea in terms of an example of one of those journeys? Like if I'm an educator and I want to set my students on one of these journeys, can you give us like a concrete example of one of them?
Absolutely. And there's so many in our book, every chapter provides a learning journey, a learning experience that has been developed by teachers of ELLES and are shared with us in this book. I'm going to give you an example of one that is just very relatable and very, you know, you can implement this anywhere, but really powerful. And it can be done at any grade level. So two teachers from Long Island, Christina Moser and Jen Anderson, decided to collaborate. So here they are actually in two different districts and they're collaborating together on a letter writing campaign for Bindaway. And it's an interesting story. So they started by raising awareness about adopting and not shopping. So it was actually an advocacy campaign, right? They learned about adopting pets as opposed to going to puppy mills and things of that nature. So there's this element of social justice in this, right? Or say some type of changing the world. And it's very authentic. They went on to write letters to their family. Well, this was a lower grade level. They were writing letters to friends and family about why they should adopt and not shop. They created posters, they created this campaign. And they were also going to participate in Bindaway's read to your pet program, right? So they were to come in and they cuddle the pets and they read a book. So there's this whole literacy piece in there as well. And unfortunately, the world shut down and they weren't able to do that. So what they wound up doing was recording themselves reading to their own pet or reading to their stuffed animals. And so you had this whole just amazing project that was infused with technology, was culturally relevant, included all of the six literacy skills, was authentic, connected them to their community. So you had the communication, the collaboration, the creativity, right? The critical thinking about these real issues. And of course the culture, you know, so that's just one that I find to be a very accessible example, but there's so many, I could talk about different projects like, you know, on the science end of it, you know, going on field trips and being part of collaborative research. So if I'm going to test the water quality, Long Beach did this, you could test the water quality in the bays in Long Beach and enter that data in a repository that is done nationwide. So now you're part of an authentic, larger, you know, system of learning. So, and of course, there's many steps to this project, but the point is, how can we engage our students in the world so that the learning that is happening, and it's standards-based, it's aligned to your curriculum. Anything you choose or design, it's not something outside of your curriculum, it is the curriculum. And especially now as we're supporting integrated ENL with all the content areas, This is a beautiful way to make that happen.
That's an amazing example, you know, and it takes me back to the question that I asked a few moments ago about the Daedalus framework and how it accomplishes high social interaction, right? So I think maybe that's a really good example of that. I love that you talked about taking it into the community. And then of course, that brings the whole piece of authenticity. This is another really important and key word when we're talking about this, right? So that's great. And now I would just like to go back to this idea of low anxiety, right? So in these traditional types of assessments that we are used to giving, let's say, as educators, they typically produced high anxiety, right? And I just want you to speak a little bit more about how Daedalus and these types of project-based learning activities kind of have the affect of low anxiety for our students as opposed to high anxiety.
Absolutely. So before I talk about the projects, I do want to say, you know, there is a place for traditional assessment that is well-designed, right? Appropriately designed traditional assessment formats.
Yes.
Right? They're not going away. The students need, but of course we know for L's, oftentimes these need to be scaffolded and tiered so that you can actually, depending on the student's proficiency level, you can actually get at their content knowledge. So that said, the most wonderful way that you can alleviate some of the anxiety associated with testing is that you're measuring these students. It's a very personalized approach, right? It's rubric based, generally speaking, with a project based learning experience. And there's multiple facets to measure, right? Students could be journaling about the project. So that's a very personal, independent piece that's being evaluated. They could be presenting in a group. So that's another piece that you could be assessing and evaluating. You obviously have artifacts or things that they're creating that can be measured in yet another way. But the key is that they are working collaboratively and they have many, many different ways to express their knowledge, right? So multiple forms of expression and not just I'm going to read this and I'm going to write that and that's it, right? So their strengths can become apparent, and even if they happen to have limited English, right, if they're like an entering or emerging student and they can visually represent what they've learned, you know, that's good. That's just as good, you know, and you put all the different pieces together to get a whole picture of the student. It's very personalized. So it should encourage students to feel like I'm being seen, I'm being heard. Let me show you what I know, you know, and give me a chance to show you what I know. So I think it's very encouraging.
Okay, so I would like to now go to this idea of the digital divide, right? Because earlier you mentioned that these frameworks and these ideas that we're discussing, they're not just for L's, right? They're for all students, right? And mm-hmm. Now you were just talking about assessment and, you know, just kind of creating that accessibility for students to be able to feel like they can do well in various modes of expression, right? And so empowering them through that. So I want to talk about the digital divide a little because I feel like it's a buzz phrase that really became even more popular during the pandemic when we noticed how difficult it was to just have everyone learn from home. Everyone, you're just going to learn from home, right? Mm-hmm. So Can you just define what you think this divide is and whether or not it's becoming whole as opposed to divided as we develop more ways to engage students technologically?
Well, the digital divide is very real. You know, unfortunately, you know, data does suggest that underserved communities generally, you know, have lack of access to technology, or there's a greater lack of access to technology at home. But the good news is that after as a result of the pandemic, many, many, many districts who might have been dragging their feet for whatever reason, intentionally or not, you know, realized the need for one-to-one mobile devices. And if they didn't already have them, they worked feverishly to make that happen. But then it became an issue of Wi-Fi access as well, right? So now I have the device, but I don't have the Wi-Fi. We've also seen a lot of initiatives and grants by different communication companies providing hotspots to districts at a reduced cost or even free for some certain terms and things that to provide students with Wi-Fi access at home. So the gap is slowly closing as our awareness grows, but you know, there are infrastructure issues that are hard to resolve overnight in rural communities. But you know, I think the awareness is there, and it's going to take some time. You know, and I also think that we have to talk about parents and how are we supporting parents to support their learners at home through the use of technology. And I really believe in, you know, community schooling. And I believe that there should be a place for parents to come in and get that training on using devices and how to best support their students. It's very important in multiple languages, by the way, right?
That's excellent. And I'm so glad that you brought that up, because in your article, you give an example of categories of digital learning resources, right? So I'd really like to discuss the category of parent communication and translation. Mm-hmm. So can you explain a bit about Class Dojo, Talking Points, and Parent Square? Just to kind of address this issue of how we are trying to incorporate parents into the fold in terms of communication.
Right. And you know, there are so many tools now that allow parents to have access to student work in a digital format. You know, something like Class Dojo, which is really great for you know, engaging parents in student behaviors and different things that are happening, successes and things that they can see their child's progress and communicate. It's, kids love badges. So it's like, it's a very, very, you know, engaging tool. But I also know that like things, like if you're talking about something like Talking Points, which, you know, is a translation tool, you know, they're so important, and they've opened the door. But you know, these things are not, the tool is a way to facilitate communication, but you still have to make sure it's, but the tool is not going to the magic wand, right? So you have to have people who are truly reaching out and not just assuming that, okay, now that they can check in on Class Dojo, now they're tuned in. You know, I still believe that parent outreach is not just about the tools we have. They're fabulous, don't get me wrong. things like Seesaw also. Seesaw is just a great platform where parents can actually see some of their students' work as well. The students are creating their own portfolios of you know, learning and evidence of learning. But any one of these tools is just building another bridge to parent communication, but it's the personal connection that ultimately is going to bring them in. I mean, I think there has to be, this is a great beginning, but I think that, are you bringing them in and training them on the tools? And then when they're there, are you having these face-to-face conversations? You know, I'm a firm, I love technology, but I'm a firm believer in building relationships, you know. So although we are so lucky to have these tools as teachers of ELLs, it is, and all teachers working with students and parents who speak another language, this is amazing. This is one of the great things of the digital age. But remember, just because you translate something doesn't mean that the information has been disseminated, it's understood. Okay, so there's more to it.
You bring up a great point, as you've been doing throughout this podcast, when you talk about building relationships, right? And I know that you are also involved with SLIFE, right? With practices involving SLIFE, students who have limited literacy and little exposure to formal education. And I happen to know from my my studies on the work that Dr. Helene Marshall has done that this relationship piece is really core to a lot of these students because of the way that they have been socialized, right? And so when that piece is not present, of course, it creates this kind of gap, right? It creates this feeling like something is missing in terms of being able to work with the whole student, right? Because of course, their family, that the family background and the culture, that is part of what makes up the student, and thinking of the student as this kind of holistic entity. Right. So, yeah, that's definitely a very important piece and something that sometimes gets missed when we focus so much on the tech stuff. OK, like, oh, well, here are these tools, you have them, you know, let's just run with these tools. And I think it's really important to take a step back to this idea of course, it's still being important to have that face-to-face and kind of interpersonal interaction within the community. So I wanted to say that I really found this article to be super thorough. Okay, if anybody wants to know anything about these digital age learning ecosystems, you know, what they are, what they can do for ELLs, et cetera. There's lots that is in this article. Now, you already mentioned that in your book, Digital Age Teaching for English Learners, right? So that's the name of the second edition of this book. You already mentioned that there are some projects that are clearly highlighted in the book. So what other juicy bits can our listeners, should they pick up this book, right? What other juicy bits can they find in the book that are not in this Language Magazine article?
So it's really a great book, I have to say, for book studies, for teachers to have conversations. We have, you know, the sample lesson ideas highlight the different concepts of each, you know, chapter. And then there are vignettes as well of educators highlighting how they've incorporated technology in creative ways. So there's two different, you know, parts of each chapter that kind of talk about practice in a really hands-on way. And then there are targeted questions so that if, you know, you are using this book as a book club or in some fashion education as a supporting text in study, there are targeted questions to help facilitate discussion because this really does require conversation. And I think that, one of the overarching themes in the book is equitable access. You know, the title is it's Digital Age Teaching for English Learners, A Guide to Equitable Learning for All Students, right? And so I think the conversations are so important around why and how technology has changed our communities and the way we you know, work with L's needs to change so that, you know, it reflects, you know, the realities of today's world. And that requires a lot of conversation about equitable access, you know, to learning.
Right. Now, so I was going to ask about a way that people can learn how to implement these digital age learning ecosystems, but I think you've given us an answer, right? They can definitely get this book in order to understand how they can implement some of these systems. But is there another way, like another resource in terms of if I really wanted to dive into how to create a high functioning digital age learning ecosystem?
Absolutely. You know, there's a, I have a free checklist that's online that anybody could access for you to do a sort of a self-assessment. I can share that with you. You know, I can share that link. It's a way for you to take a close look at your environment and what things you might want to change or adopt, or, you know, how you might transform your classroom to a more digital age learning environment, you know.
Okay, great. So we'll make sure, listeners, that we provide that information in the show notes for everybody. Okay. And I'm really curious as to, I mean, just, I know that there are some projects listed in the book, but can you just kind of tell us or kind of expand it upon in the book, but can you just give us some examples of where these systems have already been implemented?
Yeah. So we have teachers from all around the world participating in this digital age teaching for L's practices. And I'll give you an example. One of our little anecdotes, one of the teachers describes how they did virtual field trips based on the book they read Around the World in 80 Days. And she was able, which it's amazing effort, and she did it. She was able to meet with classrooms all around the world virtually as they read this book, and connected in a global way with other students and teachers. And then we get into, you know, I feel like I'm just warming up. Then we get into digital citizenship and what it means to be citizenship, what it means to be a good digital citizen. And that's a citizen of the world, you know. And there's like a whole bunch of lessons there. Just I can't begin to explain how rich those experiences were for those students. And you can read about that in the book.
Okay. I really love this idea. And I think that more people should kind of adopt this mindset of not just being a citizen of their country, right? You are a citizen of the world. And, you know, it's really important to understand how we're all interconnected, right? And to keep that connection alive, right? And it sounds like that implementation that sounds really incredible and definitely speaks to this whole idea of us, you know, really, really being one, like really actually being all in this together, right? So this was a phrase that was kind of thrown out there constantly during the pandemic, is that we're all in this together, right? So, but how realistic was that, right? So I think that implementing these types of systems in once again, in a real and authentic way can actually make us being in this together more of a reality, Okay. As we're kind of coming towards the end of this episode, I would like to give you an opportunity to talk about where people can find more information about your work and whether or not you have any upcoming projects or publications that you would like the audience to be aware of.
Well, I'm currently working on a webinar recording for TESOL, so it will be part of the conference offerings this year. So that's a 30-minute webinar on Dr. Helene Marshall's online protocol, SOFLA, the Synchronous Online Flipped Learning Approach.
Yes, yes.
So there will be a 30-minute webinar recording available to view asynchronously, you know, for that.
Great.
And I guess in addition to the article that just came out in Language Magazine, you know, I'll be presenting an ISABE on this topic on digital age teaching coming up in March. You can follow me on Instagram. I have to post a few updates there, but that's one way to find out what I'm up to or how to reach me. And of course, as an admin coordinator for the Long Island Auburn, the NYSID Long Island Auburn at Eastern Suffolk BOCES, you could always find me there. And you know, all the services that the Auburns offer are free. So I can provide, you know, technical assistance to the region through that service.
Okay. That sounds great. So, of course, I just have one final question, right? So, what burning question should today's educators consider in order to improve their service to the L community?
So, I guess it's hard, you know, try to think of one question, but I think the most important question to ask or consider is, how do you as an educator ensure that your L's have equal access to your school community and everything it offers all your students, right? So it includes academic rigor, it includes after-school programs, and it includes the socio-emotional support that they need. But, you know, there's an awareness of what is your school culture? How would you describe it? And how does it embrace your L's? I think the technology is a great way to provide students with avenues of expression and communication and collaboration, all those things. And it's important to utilize them to maximize the culture of the community to communicate and share together. So that's the ultimate goal, is to create equal access to these learning experiences and school experiences.
I think that's a great question for educators to simmer on. All right. So thank you so much for being a part of our show today, Heather Rubin. And we look forward to seeing more about your work.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to Our Burning Questions, produced by Mid-State Auburn at OCM BOCES. If you would like to learn more about today's guest or any of the resources we discussed, please visit Mid-State Auburn's webpage at ocmboces.org. That's ocmboces.org. Join us next time, where we hope to answer more of your burning questions.